The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
And I just have to tell you how grateful I am for the leadership and the people of Orlando and Central Florida for your love and compassion. And I know how many people, family members, loved ones, and friends are still grieving. And I want them to know that we will be with you. We will be with you as you rebuild your lives, as you rebuild hope for the future.
Come
because
on.
We can't ever let
Come
that
on.
Kind of hatred and violence
oh,
break the
up.
Spirit, break the soul of any place in America.
Good God, this passes for a presidency.
Thank you.
You know, all right, it's enough already. So this is the big scandal of the day. You may not see it on tonight's news. She gave a speech in Kissimmee, which is near Orlando. Orlando, of course, is the terrible location where the Muslim went on a rampage and killed how many gays did he kill in the gay nightclub? You forgot already. It was swept under the rug. Guess who was sitting behind Hillary Clinton as she gave this little hallmark speech? Guess who was sitting behind her? The Orlando murderer's father, two rows behind her. Now you say, well, that was just an accident. That is not true. Now listen to me, liberals. You got to understand something. How did they permit this terrorist's father, who himself supports the Taliban or supported the Taliban, who does a TV show in Pashtun, whatever the language may be called in Afghanistan, pardon me for not being a linguistic expert, how did they let him sit two or three rows behind Clinton as she spoke? Remember, these people are staged behind the speakers. They are handpicked for their ethnicity and their enthusiastic support for any candidate. These spots are reserved for people working the campaign who will cheer like robots at the right moments during speeches. So you have to ask yourself a question. Why would Hillary Clinton have picked the Orlando shooter's father to sit prominently behind her as she spoke about the murder in Orlando without mentioning who the murderer was or who was killed? Now, I understand that those of you who are going to vote for Hillary are not going to be upset by this because there's nothing she could do that would be wrong any more than those who support Trump will ever admit he's wrong. I get that. It's reached the point of who do you support or who do you fear more, Klump or Clinton? Who do you fear more, Klump or Clinton? It's starting to blur right now. Yesterday, 50 so-called experts attacked Trump, and they're all Republicans. And what I said first, Trump repeated last night, or a spokesman did. I'm glad to hear they're still listening. All 50 of them fear they're going to lose their jobs, that's all. And I repeated who did not attack him. The people who did not attack him, okay, are the important ones, not the 50 losers who attacked them. They're all has-been old men who are never going to work for a Trump. They might work for Clinton. So the question becomes today, who do you fear more, Klump or Clinton? At this point, it's like a blur now. How long can this campaign go on? This is worse than a Brazilian bun contest. It is worse than a Brazilian contest for who has the best behind. It's starting to reach that point of nausea to me. It's gone on for years now. And of course, it's all a distraction. It's like the Olympics. The reason it's going on and on and on with all these debates is for advertising revenue. And of course, to keep the people distracted with bread and roses. That's what it is. It's nothing but a huge distraction because no matter who wins, let me tell you right now, of course I'm going to vote for Trump. Don't misinterpret me. I would rather not vote than vote for her. I'll be very clear. I know who she is, and I don't want her anywhere near the White House nor the nuclear football. And I don't have to tell you any jokes as to why. We don't need more corruption than we already have. We don't need more Muslims coming in from terrorist nations than we already have. We don't need more Zika-infected Hondurans coming in than we already have. We don't need more Mexicans coming in than we already have. No, my friends, that's why I would never vote for Hillary. That's not even to mention the other elements surrounding her campaign that are very worrisome. But the question is, at this point, What do you fear most about Hillary Clinton? Number two, I'll give the other side a chance, because it is a radio talk show open to the public. I am not an arm of any campaign. I never have been. Yeah, I've taken sides because I'm a commentator, not a fake journalist. Those in the media are all commentators and pretend that they're journalists, but there are almost zero journalists in the media. They're all commentators posing as journalists. You're going to tell me George Slime on all of us is a journalist? He's a Democrat operative. You're going to tell me Wolfie Blitzer is a journalist? He's a Democrat operative. Jake Tapper, Democrat operative. Name one that isn't the Democrat operative. So they have a bias. They should just say it. They ought to wear a Clinton button. They should just wear a Clinton button every time they talk, just for identification purposes. So, yeah, I'll vote for Trump. I haven't said I wouldn't, and I will. But at this point, I'm bored to death of the campaign. And the constant drip, drip, drip and litany against Trump is starting to get very, very old and very boring. I ignore it all. Now he's so dangerous that the man who ran a missile silo says he's unstable to be a nuclear commander. Why? She's more stable tripping up a flight of stairs and putting a terrorist father in the audience and not knowing it? She's more stable. So this is all becoming nonsense at this point. So I'm going to go to some of the questions now on the topics that I picked before the show, other than the politics, that I think are interesting. And I think you'll find them very interesting, because here's one. Muslim flight attendant sues ExpressJet over suspension. What? Well, what happened? She used the terrorist front group, in my opinion, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, which is nothing, in my opinion, but a terrorist front group, in my opinion. And I say that for a good reason. The reason is that they're on the wrong side of everything, in my opinion. Well, they sued an airline that hired a Muslim woman. Now, she took the job knowing she was going to be a flight attendant. So what did she do? She said that they forced her to serve alcohol when she wouldn't do it, because she's such a good frum Muslim. She wouldn't serve alcohol to passengers, this sacred, clean Muslim woman. So what did she take the job for? What did she take the job for? She took it for one reason only, to sue the airline, to force the airline to stop serving alcohol, to force America to stop drinking alcohol, to force America to become a third world Muslim hellhole. I don't want to live like they do in their garbage cans. I never wanted to live in a third world hellhole, and I don't want to be dragged there by these vermin in care. So here's the question for you. Muslim flight attendant sues ExpressJet over suspension. She took the job knowing one of her duties would be to serve alcohol. That's what a flight attendant does. And then Miss Sacred Hijab, oh, I won't touch that dirty alcohol. I'm a clean Muslim. So she files a lawsuit using the Council on American Islamic Relations. You know who they are, don't you? Well, my friends, how do you feel about this? How far can Muslims push us until we push back? If Trump becomes president, should Trump close down care for being a Sharia front group trying to subvert our constitutional freedoms? You betcha. She knew what the job required when she took it. Isn't this a criminal act by a terrorist sympathizing organization, in your opinion? This is not about diversity. This is about twisting America into Sharia law. And if I have to spell out for you what Sharia law is, you really are stupid. That's topic number one. Here in San Francisco, crime is out of control. A group of burglars just drove a van through a Fisherman's Wharf storefront while it was closed, smashed the van into the TV store, digital center, photography and electronics store, in the middle of the night while the owners were away on vacation. The thieves crashed into the store and stole electronics. Smash and grab robberies are on the rise in the San Francisco area. Why do you think that's happening? Don't you think it's because of Obama's war on the cops? Don't you think it's because the mayor's war on the cops and bending over backwards to various and sundry pressure terrorist and criminal organizations? What about your town and city? Is crime on the rise? Give us examples. Here's another little topic. A group of old degenerate hippies marched through the city naked for the right to bear all. This nauseates me. Is San Francisco the most boring passé city on earth? a nude march in our, in, what is this, August of 2016, a nude march in San Francisco. Oh my, how exciting can we get? How cutting edge can we be in wild free San Francisco? Oh, what a goofy city it is. Nudists ran through the body in order to prove that we should all be able to be nude whenever we want. Hey, hey, ho, ho. Body freedom is here to stay. Hey there, dude, you're no prude. Get in the mood. Join us nude, chanted the losers, the old losers. This is San Francisco. Stripped down march to right for right to bear all. They don't have jobs, these people. What do they live on? God only knows. By the way, do you speak any Mayan indigenous languages? Yeah? Did you watch the movie by Mel Gibson, Apocalypso, a number of years ago? Very, very daring movie, by the way, filmed in a Mayan language. Well, apparently right now we need Mayan indigenous language interpreters. I wonder why we need so many interpreters. Why? Why do we need this? Well, you see, there's a shortage of people who can translate Mayan languages, especially Quiche and Mam. This is especially needed for arrivals from Guatemala, which is home to more than two dozen indigenous languages, but also from wonderful countries such as Honduras, which is exporting not only Zika to us, but many, many other things. And they go into asylum offices in Anaheim, California, and they speak in their native languages. And they need interpreters now. They can't speak English. And in order to make sure that we get more of the Earth's poor, uneducated, and diseased, they're begging for translators in Mayan languages. See, Mam is a Mayan language spoken more than 500,000 people in Guatemala. That's very important to know. And you should learn Mam and Quiche. We must have more interpreters, especially for immigration hearings, because we need more of them. Don't you think we need more 14th century Mayans in America? Isn't that what we need for the jobs of the future, would be Mayan-speaking people? That's going to make for a much more diverse workplace, a much smoother workplace, a much brighter workplace. In other words, Hillary's workplace. So, my friends, this interpreter shortage is exacerbated because there's a lack of Mayan language interpreter courses, you see. And now, my friends, you've heard the rest of that story. Because we're bringing in so many people from the 14th century, from the Middle East, now from ancient Mayan lands, like the new Guatemala. Instead of them learning English, we have to learn Mayan. Yes, my friends. Yes, my friends. Father Orlando Shooter spotted behind Clinton at a rally is the big story. That's the one we're talking about. What do you fear most about a Hillary Clinton presidency? Let's cut to the absolute bottom of the fear jungle. I mean, I joked when I said, who do you fear more, Clump or Clinton? We've heard so much negativity about Mr. Trump that there's no point in even talking about it. We've heard every possible thing he can do, and then some. And yet we've heard nothing about her. So what do you fear most about a Clinton presidency? How do you feel about the terrorist dad sitting two rows behind her at a rally in the Orlando area? He supports the Taliban. He has a show over there in his native language, whatever, that he does at night, dressed in an army uniform. He supported the Taliban, and Hillary will not disavow it. Very interesting, my friends. What do you fear most about a Hillary presidency? I don't know why you fear Trump so much. Let's see, he wants to close the borders when we're being overrun, and we don't need these immigrants. What do we need them for? Can anyone explain to me why we need these immigrants who are uneducated, don't speak the language, many of whom are diseased, many of whom have criminal backgrounds in their own countries? Explain to me why we need them. Oh, the Democrats want them because they're born Democrat voters. They're not workers. They're not coming into work, most of them. Be very clear. I'll be very clear about this. They're not like your grandfather or grandmother. They're not coming here to work. They're not coming here to be Americans. They're not coming here to learn English. They're not coming here to learn the Star Spangled Banner. Why do we need them? Trump says he'll build a wall and close the borders. She says she'll open the borders even further until you are a minority in your own country. Think about it before you vote. I'll be right back. What do you fear most about a Hillary Clinton presidency? Let's just get down to the old brass tacks. Everyone fears her who doesn't want her. Everyone fears Trump who doesn't want him. We know what they fear about Trump. We hear it about every day on every outlet. But we never hear what we fear about Clinton. I am airing that. What do you fear most about Hillary Clinton as a president? Rich on WABC, 30 seconds or less, just fire it away.
Thank you for taking the call, Dr. Savage. Oh, my man. Fear is that Hillary Clinton will appoint Barack Obama to the Supreme Court, which will just douse the gasoline on the fire.
Oh, my God. Oh, God. You talk about a scorched earth policy.
Brutal. I have two small children, and I fear...
Oh, my God. You know, I never perceived that that could even happen. It could happen. He'd be with us forever. That cursed figure would be in a black robe staring at us for the rest of our lives, upsetting everything he possibly can from the Supreme Court, threatening everybody on the Supreme Court, making a mockery of the Supreme Court, mocking everything that's decent in this nation. Hey, thanks very much. I'm sending you a copy of Scorched Earth, which will be out after Labor Day. Yeah, that's really a great idea. But I don't think he'd want to be on the Supreme Court. I don't think that's big enough for him. I've thought about what Obama's going to do after the presidency. Have you? How about interesting? Let's add that to the topics. What do you think Obama will likely do after he leaves the presidency? That's a great question. And one thing came to my mind is he'd like to run the world. So where could he do that? He's done such a bang-up job here in America. He could go over to the UN, but that's small potatoes for him. That's more of a symbolic position. It's like a League of Nations. No one pays attention to them. Maybe he could run the World Bank. That's where the money is. Don't know. What do you think he might do after he's through with the presidency? Great questions right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
So the two main questions are, what do you fear most about a Hillary presidency? We know what you fear about a Trump presidency if you're a Democrat, because we hear it 24-7. Every channel, every news show, Trump this, Trump that, Trump this, Trump that. Then 50 stooges who are going to lose their jobs come out and say he's a nuclear disaster. We hear it every day, but we never hear anything negative about her. How is it possible? Many people fear her deeply. For good reason. Now, on a macro level, we know she stands for a very big government. You say, well, what's wrong with that? Just think Stalin, if you want to know what big government. Think Mao Zedong. Think any dictator. That's what federal governments are. Federal civilian workforce soars to 2.79 million employees after years of restraint. It's the biggest it's ever been in history. Almost 3 million people work for the federal government. Obama has grown it like a helium balloon. Why? Why? Because they're patronage positions. They are patronage positions. They're highly coveted by people who cannot do anything else. They're highly coveted by deadbeats who can't get a job in the private sector. They're highly coveted by college graduates who are fit for nothing. They all want a federal job. Jog in the morning, drink coffee, look fit and do nothing. And then move up the GS scale. Just make more and more money for doing less and less. Everybody wants a federal job. They did so in the Soviet Union. How'd that work out? Until eventually the government, the whole society collapsed because the people had to pay for the jobs. I think that Trump would shrink the civilian workforce. By the way, I'm pretty sure he would. We don't know. See, this is the one thing about Trump that's starting to worry me, and I have to say it. Now it's going to be free child care for all? That's amazing to me. Half the things he's saying seem like they're very liberal. I like the tax revolution of Donald Trump. I like the tax revolution enormously. I think it'll be good for me personally and for the economy and for jobs, for sure. It doesn't have to be about the rich only. I mean, the fact is that when people own businesses and pay less taxes, where do you think the money goes? You don't seem to understand that. They don't put it under the mattress. They reinvest the money. They expand their factories and they hire people, or they buy a yacht. Who builds a yacht? Workers. or they buy a Gulfstream jet. Who builds a Gulfstream jet? They're built in Georgia. American workers. So why do you resent the rich so much? Their workers build jets. Workers build boats, whether they're yachts or small pleasure craft. Why would you want to fight that? So that's a good thing. But then he says he's going to pay for child care. This is starting to get a little weird now, where he's going. I can't even find the article. This is a really worrisome. You want to see this? This is a freako article. Clinton and Trump debate sites plan a third podium. That's really weird. A third podium for whom? The bell tolls. Clinton-Trump debate sites plan for a third podium. With third-party candidates hovering near the threshold, the debate commission advises hosts to consider a bigger stage. That's rubbish. That's absolute rubbish. Gary Johnson and Jill Stein couldn't collect the same number of votes that I could, and I'm not running. I mean, if I said tomorrow I'm running for office, I could pull a certain percentage of the vote away from Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Gary Johnson has no following whatsoever, a bunch of cranks. Jill Stein, I don't know who she is. I have no idea who these people are. The only reason to put him up there would be to trip up Donald Trump. Commission for presidential debates. That's nonsense. Okay, don't even call on that one. What do you think Obama will do when he leaves the presidency? I'm flying high today. I had an espresso before the show with a little twist of the lemon rind, a la Mulberry Street of my youth. I never understood the lemon part of coffee until I got older, and then I realized that it balances out the acid in coffee. It's very brilliant. So it's very good. Now I don't have to eat lunch on air. Once I have coffee, I'm so hyper I can't even eat, which is a double. You get a double out of it. So I'm good for 3 hours. I'm good to go. Tomorrow, big announcement coming from me and from others about a lot to do with my show that you're going to be, those of you who love me are going to be very happy when you see this tomorrow. Those of you who are jealous of me and have hoped I would trip finally and fall off the stage, I'm sorry. You're going to have a very bad day tomorrow. All of you who stood in my way are going to have a miserable day tomorrow. Very miserable. All of you who know you can't compete with me, you're going to have a really miserable day. All of the Salieris out there are going to have a very bad day. All of the Salieris are going to break their violins. There's only one Mozart. Mozart makes his announcement tomorrow. Anyway, that's tomorrow. Today we've got to deal with the topics. I've given you some of them. Here's another one that I didn't throw into the mix yet. I'll throw it all out now while the caffeine is still high in the sky. China's attacking Trump, which is a good thing. China says Trump plays a China-bashing card amid falling popularity. Now, if you read this press release from the Chinese, Xinhua, which I think is their official news agent, that's their Pravda. It's like their NBC or CNN. Xinhua has attacked Trump, saying that it's inflammatory rhetoric meant to appeal to blue-collar Midwestern voters. It called Trump's remarks dangerous and said they offered nothing of substance to improve bilateral relations. Well, this means that Trump's doing something right. Of course he's said things that have substance. He's going to raise tariffs on Chinese goods. That's a good thing. I published it in the... Which book was it? I think Stop the Coming Civil War was one of my ideas. Yeah, so that's a very good idea. So why would China get mad? Because they're afraid they'll actually have to pay their fair share and stop screwing us. Trump accuses China of illegally subsidizing exports. By the way, Japan did that until they destroyed our electronics industry. Manipulating its currency, of course they're doing that. Stealing intellectual property, of course they do that. They're recurring themes in his campaign because they're real. They're very real. Of course, nobody talks about China's communist political system or human rights abuses. No one talks about the torture, the death labor camps, mainly of the Christians in China. It's swept under the rug. So China's attacking him. And they're saying that it's doing strictly as China bashing, which is nonsense. Utter nonsense. Let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. What do you fear most about a Hillary presidency? Other than hearing a grating voice for 8 years. That's what the part I can't take is listening to her. That hard voice, it's not that it scares me, it offends me deeply. I find her very offensive. I don't like women who are not feminine. I don't like hard women who are like men without, well, let's put it this way, men without pants. It's a family show. What's the difference between a man and a woman if a woman is as ruthless as a man? What is the benefit? I don't understand why women are so excited about, oh, she's the first woman. In what sense is she the first woman president? What does that matter? Why would that matter? What is that issue? WABC Dan, what do you fear most about a Hillary presidency?
Well, besides listening to that shrill voice for the next 8 years, is has her lust for absolute power. I think that she's going to do anything she possibly can to keep the Democratic Party in power and change the demographic completely of the country, you know, with the illegals and grant amnesty, anything she possibly can to just give it.
So, in other words, she will continue to attack the white male portion of the population in particular. I mean, let's cut to the chase. We know she has a vendetta for white males. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Come on.
We know that the entire Democrat Party has we know the entire Democrat Party has said, we don't need blue-collar whites anymore. We are importing the voters. We don't need you. That's what the entire modality of their diversity pitch happens to be. Give us all the minorities. Give us all the gays. Give us all the immigrants. Because eventually, we will win by demographics. Is that not their message?
Absolutely, and they'll do and say anything.
How could any white male ever vote for a Democrat? I'll never understand. I don't understand it because they're digging their own grave.
And so I'm
That's all. End of story. Let's move on. That's all. Okay, here's another. I'm getting great callers. I like some from around the country. It's all WABC. Is there no one else out there, Jim? Like out of the 9 callers I can get at any time or 10... I'm overloaded with WABC because they love me in New York because I sound like I'm from New York because I am. You know that no one in New York sounds like they're from New York anymore because they're all from Cleveland or somewhere else? The people who love New York most were not born there. I found it out. Most of the excitement in New York and Manhattan in particular is from people who were never born there. They're excited to be there because compared to where they came from, it's exciting. I mean, where else can you... Whatever, I can't do it. It's a family show. But the thing is... If New Yorkers are not that excited about living in New York. They don't get everything. Wow, I'm so happy to be a New Yorker. Oh, yeah. That's so provincial. That is the most provincial thing on earth to think you're better than everyone because you live east of the Hudson River. What does that make you? What? You saw an actor in the street? That's like Hollywood's the same thing. People go to restaurants just to see somebody. The food is horrible. If I could name the restaurants I went to that you should never go to in Hollywood again... I'd never be allowed in again, but it doesn't really matter because I don't intend to ever go there again. I couldn't believe how bad it was. The Italian food I had the other night in Hollywood was so bad, and it was like hard to get in and this and that. It was horrible. The worst. I couldn't wait to get home and go to my local pizzeria. It was better. And then it was so bad that I cooked my own food for 2 nights in a row. So what I'm saying is, what do people go to these restaurants for? To be seen and to see. So if you're a nobody, no one sees you because they don't know who you are. So you're going there just to see Katzenberg, Hatzenberg, Matzenberg, Ratzenberg. Like if you're another, oh God, there's, and does that make your meal better that you saw somebody? To me, it's the sauce, not the people. So anyway, it's the same thing with New York. What's the big deal? I mean, what's the big deal? It's a great city, and that's the end of it. But the thing is, what's so exciting about so many things about cities anymore, you know, but people in New York love me. That's why I got distracted. The reason the show is number one on WABC and why people resent me is because they're not even from New York, but they're, let's put it to you this way, they sound like they think that they're from New York, but I actually am from New York even though I don't live there. How is that possible? I'm like in a time capsule. Like I left New York in, I don't even know the year I left. God, I left in the hippie era. I fled New York in 1968. Would you believe it? It's true I moved back for short periods of time. It's true my family, in part, is still there. Not so much. Since my mother died, may she rest in the Lord. I don't go back there. My ancestors are buried out there. My grandfather's buried there. My father, may rest in peace. My mother, may she rest in peace. My brother. I mean, they're all there, you know. But, so where are you really from? Tell me where you're really from in this world. How do you identify with where you're from, where your ancestors are buried? That's how it used to be, incidentally. Maybe that's how we should do a litmus test now for politicians. I mean, Hillary's as much a New Yorker as my dog is, Chappaqua. I love that one. She's a New Yorker, right. Yeah. That wasn't a road to the presidency. And the airplane that went down with that seat and that was perfect and selected directly for that and gone. That strange air crash, everyone forgot that one. No one even talks about it. Do you remember JFK Jr., the strange airplane crash? He was in the secured liberal Democratic seat, the Moynihan seat, which was a lock right to the presidency. He actually should be running. Did you know that? Do you know that he actually would have run instead of Obama, JFK Jr.? Did you know that? But he had that strange plane crash that went down over the over Long Island Sound. You forgot that already. I don't forget these things. And then all of a sudden, a carpetbagger arrives on the scene, direct from Arkansas, and now she's running for the presidency as a real New Yorker. You talk about a novel. Good God. It's a good thing I don't write novels much anymore. I want to talk about some other things. I'm kind of bored of politics, but I'll do the politics for a while. I think I'm burned out again. I really am burned out of this. It's like the 9th of August. And I used to do in August, the end of August in the Hotel Savage. Remember that? Raise your hand if you remember that segment. August was a lag month. Most sane people are away. Psychiatrists go away is pretty standard. Your therapist is gone. Everyone goes away in August. So if you're not going away and you're still listening to talk radio, do you still want to hear day and night? Is that all you want to talk about? Crump and Trinton? The day and night? Clump and Trinton? It's like a blur already. Clump or Trinton. You don't know who is who anymore. It's like a blur. It's starting to get a blur. And we all want it to be over with. This is like a final exam that cannot come soon enough so we can move on. We can't take the pain anymore. It's painful. Do you know that this campaign is becoming painful? And by the way, I don't know that she's going to finish the race. It looks to me like she's stumbling and falling. And she's going to... I don't think she can finish this one with the steps... And the brain freeze, did you see the brain freeze the other night? In the middle of a speech, a zero. A zero, forgot what she was talking about. Trump, on the other hand, because of the meatloaf and the good air of Alley Pond Park of his youth, I think he's stronger than people give him credit for. I remember when he was on the show, way in the beginning of the campaign, I said, do you think you have the stamina for this? And he said, yes, I do, because I had wonderful parents. It was an amazing answer. Everyone forgot that. I guess I'm running short. I'll be back. What we need is more long, tall Sallys in the world. Oh, let me hear Little Richard. I can't. I'm going brain dead from the Orlando Jihadi's father and Hillary. Little Richard for president. So here is a woman who would be the leader of America and the free world. She picks the guy who killed all those gay people using 260 bullets to kill 49 gays. Shooting one of the gay people 10 times. And his father is two rows behind Hillary at a speech, and she says she doesn't know anything about it. He's a Taliban member. He's tied to radical Islamist groups. He said God will punish gays. He helped run a radical mosque that his son regularly attended. Jeff Sessions says that this guy is clearly an extremist. How is it that she doesn't know that this terrorist father is sitting two rows behind her at a Clinton rally in Kissimmee, Florida? How is it that she doesn't mention Islam in tribute to the victims in front of the father? How is it all of this possible? What is the message that she is sending? So if she knew it, she's sending a message to Muslims. If she didn't know it, what does it tell you about her campaign and her? That's all. That's why I say Little Richard for president.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
You'll never know, Paul. Eddie.
Where is Eddie today?
Don't make me wait too long.
Where is Eddie today? It was Eddie who saved us from Hitler. The carpenters, the plumbers, the electricians, the farmers, the doctors, the lawyers, the engineers. The average man in America saved us from Hitler. Where is he today? I think only Eddie can save us from the scourge of radical Islam. But in order to defeat radical Islam, we have to define radical Islam for what it is. And as far as I am concerned, if Hillary Clinton wins, we're finished. She will not even say radical or Islam in the same sentence. To her, there is no crime associated with a religion that at its core needs to be looked at from the point of view of what are they teaching the youth? What are they teaching their youth that they come out of these mosques and madrasas ready to kill? Not all of them, of course. Oh, no, most are moderate Muslims. But if there's only 1%, what would you say, it's 1%? 1% of the Muslims in the world are radical. It's actually much higher than that. I read that 51% of Muslims would like to see Sharia law imposed all around the globe. So how many of the Muslims here in America want to see that medieval set of laws imposed upon us? A large percentage. And they're doing it through the courts, of course. They learned the trick. Oh, yeah, they learned from the boys at NYU and Columbia. Columbia, I'm going to march with the workers. They learned all the tricks of the lawyers. Sue. Do it through the law, through the courts. Do it through the courts and through the judges. The judges, think of Bernie Sanders and the courts. When you say courts, think of Bernie Sanders. So Trump would hopefully stop this creeping Sharia. Now, let's put it in financial terms. Remember I jokingly said 10 years ago I once went to a neighbor's house party, and all of these spoiled white people who I don't talk to, they were a retired couple, they had 4 bedrooms, they were only living in 2 of them. I said to them, you know, what the Democrats stand for is what happened in the ex-Soviet Union. You don't understand this. Well, go watch Dr. Zhivago again. That when the communists took over, they took away people's houses. Not entirely. They put the owners in the basement, and they put workers all over the house. Now, you say, well, that can't happen here. They thought I was crazy. This story was a shocker this morning. In Sweden, wealthy Swedes are being asked to give up their country homes for Muslims and for Africans. That's right. Authorities in northern Sweden are asking homeowners to give up their houses for newly arrived migrants. Does your country house stand empty in winter? Asked an email. You see, some houses in the Stockholm municipality are only occupied during the summer. And so criminal, liberal, communist authorities hope to put immigrants into these empty houses. And you know why? Because the migrants have protested their living conditions. They come from mud huts in Africa or refugee camps in Syria, and now they're demanding better housing wherever they go. The area's director of social services, a Muslim named Ali Rashidi, told a newspaper, "We thought that there are certainly many houses and rooms that can be rented out for the winter. We have housing needs." And so they're forcing them to rent their houses to the migrants. Well, that's nice of them. They're actually going to rent them. I didn't know that. However, what if they don't give up their houses to the migrants? Refugees, we are told, get establishment support from the employment service. In other words, they're being paid the minute they get there with free rent. Asked about homeowners' fears that migrants with social problems could misuse their properties, the Muslim, Mr. Rashidi, said officials will act to match up appropriate landlords and tenants. Okay. Here's another one. Blacks-only classes will now target special populations. Yep. After facing national criticism, Moraine Valley Community College, wherever that is, God knows what that is. This comes from campus reform by Anthony Golkowski, has announced that it will make some revisions to its blacks-only course. You see, the school had set aside multiple sections of a mandatory introductory course exclusively for black students. Defending the practice is a method for getting students to open up. One of the teachers said, sometimes we set aside sections for specific populations, including veterans and older students. Moran's assistant director of communication, Jessica Crotty, told Campus Reform, you get the picture. Well, now they got so attacked for this that they said they'll no longer offer sections of this course for special racial groups, though we'll continue to offer sections of its College 101 course for the success of special populations. All right, there you got that picture. But the main question that you're calling on is, what do you fear most about a Hillary presidency? That's all, no matter what I do. No matter what I do, no matter how I try to steer the show into something more intriguing, it's just Hillary Trump, Hillary Trump, Hillary Trump, Clump, Trinty, Trinton, Clump, Clump, Clint, Clinton, Clump, Trinton. You can't, if you were to say Trump and Clinton 100 times, just say Trump, Clinton, Clinton, Trump. It becomes Clump or Trinton after a while. We are blurred. Our minds are just going dead from it all. And that's where I'm trying to change it up, but okay, it's pointless. It's all you want to talk about at talk radio. I'm not mad at you. I'm not mad at you at all. This morning I was putting together a radio timeline of when I began a radio for the Radio Hall of Fame induction ceremony. I have to book a table. I have to book a hotel room. I'm already pestering the family to attend. There's already excuses flying around. Gee, I'd love to, but I'll be an ex. All right, fine. It's, you know, I have many lifetimes left. Sure, don't come. Don't come to the award. It's not a big deal to you. So I went back to 1994, where I began my radio career on a station in San Francisco called KGO as a fill-in host. And I read this. At the time, my slogan was, to the right of Russia and to the left of God. That's still pretty good. It's still true. To the right of Russia and to the left of God. On January 1, 1995, Savage was given his own show on KSL during the drive time hours. The show quickly became a local hit. During his time at KSL, Savage reached number one in Arbitron ratings among both adult men and women over 18 during afternoon drive time and became a top talk host in his time slot. I want to pause there for a minute. The reason I made waves in San Francisco is because I was who I am when there was no one like me in radio in San Francisco. There was no one ever heard anything like it. They couldn't believe that I was allowed on the radio. And the people at the radio station, who were all liberals, down to the, well, maybe 99% of them, tried to stop my career from the beginning. They did things you'll never believe. They set me up. I remember once I was coming out of an elevator in the KGO building. All I did was, I was coming down out of the elevator. And a woman was coming in. And she banged into me on purpose. I said, excuse me. She went right to Human Resources and said, he tried to throw me out of the elevator. I couldn't believe the things people did. Then there was a pervert on the station who's in jail now for child molestation stuff. One of the most vile human beings on earth. He did everything he could when I came along. It's amazing the things that they throw in your way, the impediments people throw in your way. And now here we are, 22 years later, together. I'm not going to read every word of it. You know, I'll do it another time. You can read it yourself. Tomorrow's the big announcement for the industry, and it's a big deal for me for a number of reasons, which I'll tell you tomorrow. I am in the twilight of my career. Let me be very clear. I've never said that. I guess you're supposed to always make believe that you're 30 years old and you're going to be around forever. I will not be around forever. I will not be on radio forever. These are the best years of my life, and many people who follow this show know that I've gotten better as the years have gone on. I feel very much like Babe Ruth when I do radio now, as opposed to when I was in the beginning, sort of like a Joe DiMaggio type, where you have to run around the bases very fast. Babe Ruth would swing and miss sometimes, but when he hit him, they go right out of the park, and he would walk around the bases. That's basically what I am in radio right now. And the thing is, I look at my career, I look back, I look forward, I have one last big book coming out, Scorched Earth. It's my last big book. I got to tell you, again and again, I just published the great book, Government Zero, which is a hard book to beat. It's phenomenal. Then I followed it up with the great book, Teddy and Me, with me and Ted. And now we have Scorched Earth coming up from the great publisher again. And that's it. I don't have it in me to do another nonfiction book. I might do fiction. You might see a volume of my earlier unpublished works, which you say, oh, how interesting. How interesting to read his early stories. To some, it might be. You know, maybe a small audience would like to read the poetry and the journals and the novellas I wrote, some of which were so far ahead of their time. I want to publish those before it's too late to do so, honestly. Because, see, my fear is this. It's like once you get to a certain point in your life or you pass on altogether, I don't want to get dark right now, but I'm going to do it anyway. Well, I'm in that kind of mood. It's not that I need more coffee. I don't even know how I got here. I want to go here anyway. That's what I've done all my life. I told you I worked at my father's antique store when I was a kid, right? Raise your hand. You remember that? I was like the assistant in this antique store, like a Charles Dickens basement in Manhattan on the Lower East Side on Ludlow Street. It's still there, 137 Ludlow. It's now a hipster bar, which is just the way it should be. It's the way life is. I mean, you go down in that neighborhood, which was once teeming with immigrant Jews, and you see that you look up in some buildings on that street, you see a Jewish star. They're now a toy store or a sex club. I mean, it's just the way of America. Things change. So I would work in that basement cleaning bronzes. Now, I mean, you know, like it's not interesting unto itself. Bronzes in time, bronze statues, and I'm still fascinated by late 19th century French antiquities. Clocks, Doré bronze, marble. I collect some of them. Bronzes with statues, very popular in New York in the 50s and 60s. People would buy them and make them into lamps, which was an abomination to begin with. Imagine turning a work of art into a lamp. Why couldn't you just put, because they were poor, basically, poor bourgeoisie. They didn't understand that the sculpture itself was the whole point of it. But they were so gauche and so nouveau that they didn't like the patina on the bronzes, which was a dark chocolate color, so they wanted it to look brassy, like gold, you know what I'm saying? So I would be in the basement with cyanide solution and rubber gloves, no mask, of course, and the pellets would be dropped into the water. The stuff that they used at San Quentin was a few molecules away. And here I was, this little kid with a ducktail haircut, scrubbing with toothbrushes. I could, to this day, remember choking and gagging in the basement, cleaning the bronzes with the cyanide to get the patina off the bronze. So the gauche New Yorkers could buy them and turn them into lamps. And my father made a living doing it. God bless everyone for buying those lamps. And as I'd clean, I'd get bored. The same way I'm doing talk radio and bored about politics. I mean, there's a certain limit to a certain topic. You get bored. So I'd wander around that basement of that store, that dank basement. And there were huge, empty wine barrels. Huge, empty wine barrels. The basement smelled of wine. The guys would buy these empty wooden wine barrels with, you know, metal bands around them, and they would use them for storing things like, I mean, they throw not wet garbage in there, but things that they couldn't sell. Remember, they were petty merchants. So they threw away things that had no inherent commercial value. What would they throw in there? Well, they would buy trunks, shipping trunks at subway auctions and ocean liner auctions of people who died or never claimed them, right? You know how many things are left on subways, even going in those days? So they buy suitcases and trunks at an auction. In those days, they were unopened. Otherwise, nobody would buy them. They had to be unopened because who's going to buy something unless there's a chance that there's something of value in it, right? So the guys would spend $5, $10 for a trunk, depending upon how it looked, and hoping they'd find a gold ring or a gold watch in it, right? Well, I would go through the barrels looking at the stuff they threw out that they felt had no value. And what do you think I would find? Photographs, manuscripts, music compositions. Here I am, a kid, 8 years old, and I'm looking at these things, understanding that they had more value than the bronze I was cleaning. And I would see pictures of a guy. Oh, I got to tell you the story when I come back, right here on the Savage Nation. Here's the Savage Nation. I don't have time to develop that story right here. You know, we're talking about politics, which is what do you fear most about a Hillary presidency and what do you think Obama will do after he's out of the presidency? And we'll do it continuously, but I went into a tangent, which I'm famous for, because to me that's the stream of consciousness that makes radio possible. Otherwise, you may as well bang your head against a stone wall and bleed to death. To do the same thing over and over again for 3 hours, not for me, thank you. But so I'm telling you why I want to publish after the next book, Scorched Earth. That's it for the nonfiction. My unpublished manuscripts. I went into a long digression. Little boy cleaning the bronzes basement. And I go through the barrels where they throw out the stuff that nobody thought was worth anything. and these big barrels had the contents of steamer trunks. What's a steamer trunk? No one has them anymore. People would go to Europe, and they'd have a trunk. They put all their clothes and possessions in it. And then they come home from Europe with a trunk. Sometimes the trunk would be left with the shipping line and sold off at auction. So the men would buy it, break the locks open when they got it back to the store at night. I was there when they would do it. It was very exciting. And rifle through it looking for, a ring, a gold watch, something they could sell. They were poor merchants. They throw everything else in the garbage. So while I'm cleaning, I get bored and I go look in the barrels. And what do I find? I find photographs, manuscripts, as I said, that they threw out. And you'd see pictures of the guy leaving the dock on the west side of Manhattan, waving goodbye. There was a picture of him in a suit, full of promise he was going to be the great American artist, writing the great American novel. And then you see pictures of him in Paris, where nothing happened. And then the last few pictures, he would be looked bedraggled. And then you'd find his music compositions in there that no one bought, or his writings, or the painting rolled up, which I would unfold and look at. Some of them were pretty good. Even as a kid, I knew some of them were good. So I was always interested in the outtakes. Now, I have, in my own life, such outtakes that have never been published. So I figure, I don't want them to be thrown in a barrel, man, and I want to do something with them now. So God gave me all these years, and that's what I want to do. Now we'll go back to regular.
Savage.
Haircut, 58 Chevy in my dreams. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Drag racing on the connecting highway. Good memories. Does anyone drag race anymore? Yes, they do. I see the shows. My favorite shows on TV are boxing. Hitler getting defeated. Hitler the junkie. Hitler the meth addict. That's a good one. Showing him doing the jig on meth. He's a meth head. That's the whole thing now. He's a drug addict. They were explaining it because of drugs. What, was he a victim? I don't quite understand what they're trying to say. Now, all of the Nazi youth were on meth. Then we had to invent a drug to keep up with them. So our doctor, our pharmaceutical guys put our guys on Benzedrine so they could fly, night flights for two nights straight. And the whole war was fought by drug addicts. So that's why I can't just do Klump or Trenton today. My mind's not on it anymore. I wish the campaign were over. I'd like to live with whoever wins. I hope he wins. If she wins, I'll still be here. I'm not leaving the country. I never said I would. I don't know where people... They go on my Facebook. Oh, good riddance. I never said I'd leave if she wins. I'll survive America if she wins. Believe me. I'm not running anywhere. I was born here, unlike the president. I have nowhere to go. I have no desire to live anywhere else. I can survive it. Trust me. I know what the world is like. I don't understand people are so terrified every minute of how bad it is. America's still the greatest place on earth. We have phenomenal freedoms. I often wonder, how much of this is in our own heads of paranoia about how bad it is? How much of it is just hype to make things worse than it really is, to sell radio shows, books, and that stuff like that? How bad is it really in this country? Well, it's bad compared to what it could be in the ideal. Yes, Obama is a petty autocrat. We understand that. Yes, he has stolen power. Yes, he has taken over so many aspects of our lives which he shouldn't have been allowed to do. Yes, I understand that. However, when I lay down in bed at night, I'll give you an example, on a soft bed with nice sheets and a nice pillow, and the air is just right, and everything's nice. And what if it's not just perfect? And I think of my ancestors. I think of my great-grandfather sleeping on a clay oven in Russia in a village because there was no heating. They put him next to the oven for warmth. Or I think of the starvation or the privation of what people foraged in order to eat. Well, what are we complaining about? Most of us running around worrying about how fat we are. And we can't see our abs or our lats or our butt or this or that. This is a society. This is what we're worried about, that our butt's not perfect. I never saw anything like it. So I keep an historic eye on life in order to understand how things really are, opposed to how the world could be and is for most people on the planet. So you get immigrants coming here from Guatemala, don't speak English, they speak a Mayan dialect, they come from a 14th century. Right away we have to give them every benefit of the universe, including a translator. Why? Who said I owe it to them? So you say, well, wait a minute, didn't your grandfather flee oppression to come here? I get the argument. Yeah, but he came here and worked. Came here and built a business with the few dollars he had. He didn't come in to live on his fat behind on welfare. Don't tell me it's the same thing. It's not exactly the same. It's totally different. We have a welfare state now. There was no welfare state when my ancestors came here. They had to work or they died. That was the end of it. There was no social services. The family had to take someone in who got sick. The neighbor didn't want to take care of him. So what are we bringing in? The sick and the poor and the criminal from around the world. They're not coming here to work. 90-some-odd million people don't work in this country under Obama. And the question is, how much longer can this go on? The whole world is built on a house of cards. The world's economy right now is built on a completely fraudulent basis. There is no basis for it. It's hyperbole. You ask yourself, how long can this go on? But it's not limited to here. What nation has a fundamental economy? That's what I want to know. I remember when I tried to figure this out when I was a teenager. I used to think about these things. So I came to the conclusion that nations with true natural resources were those with true value. So I said, oh, that makes sense to me. I remember thinking that through. So in my mind, Canada was a nation with fundamental wealth because it had fundamental resources. North America has fundamental wealth, fundamental resources. Now when you see a Clinton running for the presidency and you see that she manipulated the laws while Secretary of State, in many ways, including permitting the sale of 25% of our indigenous uranium stores to Russia, you have to ask yourself, who in the heck is she? She makes believe that she hates Putin and she says Trump's tied to Putin, but she has deeper ties to Russia than anyone else. In fact, if you investigate this story in any detail, you find out that Trump has no interest in Russia. He tried to build hotels and couldn't do it. He had no contacts in Russia. While she has such deep contacts with Russia that she arranged for the sale of 25% of our uranium to Russia. So it just shows you, you know, how many boomerangs are going around out there. Let me take a call. I haven't taken many calls. You know, I got one caller on this memoir thing, the barrels and the manuscripts. Did anyone like that story? The kid with the bronze, with the barrels, with the late night. Did anyone like that story? I mean, it's August. Can we take a breather from Klump and Trenton for a minute and do something else? I am famous for my storytelling. I am a famous raconteur. That's why I built my career. Anyone could do politics. Anyone could be a commentator on politics. All you need is the ability to do it. You read an article from the Drudge Report, and you say it over and over, 5 or 10 different ways, the same thing. And suddenly you're a genius. But try telling stories and keeping an audience. That's another story. Chris, WVNN Radio, line 3. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Great title for the collection of your unpublished memoirs, Detours in My Life.
That's nice.
One of the things that I love so much about your show are the detours, the little stories about when you were a kid, the things that kind of more lighthearted and take the focus away from the constant pounding of the politics. And those,
you know, I got to say this. A lot of people say that to me, but there's always the risk that the core audience only wants to hear about the election, and you could go brain dead from it. I don't know how people can listen to this every day.
I think a great title for your collection would be "Detours in My Life" or "Detours in My Journey," because those are going to be the little things where you went off track from where you were headed. And that's why you hadn't already published them, is you had a goal in mind, you were going somewhere, you were on a roadmap, and that was a detour to it, kind of like the little things in your show. But I bet you a lot of people are going to love that as much or more than a lot of the other things that were your actual goal at the time, because it's so entertaining.
Well, thank you. You're calling from Alabama, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Why is it that Southerners understand me better than New Yorkers do today? How is that possible? How is it that a guy like me sounds like he's from New York and most New Yorkers detest me because I'm not a liberal? And guys from Alabama who don't sound like me like what I have to say. How is that possible?
Well, country people in general understand and love people who are storytellers. Storytelling is an absolute lost art. We still have here every year in Athens, Alabama, a storytelling festival. You know, some of the great, you know, Louis Grizzard used to come and feel storytelling.
I love that. I didn't know about this. That's incredible. See, now that's something to be worth traveling for. Would they accept a Yankee telling a story like this?
Absolutely. They'd love to have you.
What's the name of the event?
It's Athens, Alabama, the Storytelling Festival. They have it every year, have for the last 12 or 14 years.
Robert, would you write that down? I got to look into that. Did you say Athens?
Alabama. Yes, sir.
Athens, Alabama.
Yeah.
Well, my good friend, I'm going to send you a storybook called Teddy and Me, because that's out, so stay on the line. There's one other story I must tell. I must tell another story since I got distracted with my boredom of politics and went off on a tangent. So indulge me, if you will, since it's August, and we have plenty of time left to beat ourselves up over the election. Here's another one. I told it only once before in my 22-year career. You may as well have some enjoyment right now. So I remember one night we come back from Philadelphia, because another thing my father would do is, in addition to buying the steamer trunks, he would buy, of course, antiques from importers. Not everything was from a nun's trunk. It wasn't all from trunks. It wasn't all secondhand goods. And sometimes I would take off from school. Those were the happiest memories of my life, when I knew I was going on a road trip with him from New York to Philadelphia in those days, of course by car, to buy, you know, from the wholesalers, because I loved guns even as a kid. And I said, to this day, they were all unheated, warehouse-like stores filled with antiques. And in those days, there were a lot of flintlock pistols around. Boy, oh boy, I wish I had grabbed them. You know, paid for them. I was always fascinated by dueling pistols. And I was always fascinated by cased dueling pistols. Today I own about three different sets that I paid retail for, unfortunately, not wholesale. But in those days, I would always add, they were like blue and perfect. Perfect, perfect. I always wanted them. My father wouldn't buy them because there was no market for them. Nobody in New York in those days would buy dueling pistols. And we'd come back late at night, driving on the Jersey Turnpike, PA Turnpike, Jersey Turnpike, come in over through the tunnel, get into the store on a cold night, like 10 o'clock, unlock the store. Nobody was in there down the Lower East Side. It was eerie, very black and white, movie-ish. And then he and his assistant, Louis the alcoholic who got bitten by the monkey later on in his life, I wrote about that years ago, we'd unpack and go through the Excelsior that they were packed in and stuff like that. It was very exciting for a kid. It was very interesting. I hated school compared to that. Well, connected to that story is the nuns. Is the trunk story. They kind of merged together. So as I said to you, those were the kind of things and how they bought in that little store on Ludlow Street in Manhattan. There were 10 merchants in that little store. Each one sold different things. And as I said, most of them went to the subway auctions and bought the used suitcases and trunks. Well, one of the trunks they bought, I remember they brought it in late at night. One of the other men brought it in, and they would all open it up and each other to show what they got. Like, they compete a little bit. Hey, look what I found. Look at this, a gold watch. Hey, look at this, a wedding ring. You know, they would compete. It was like friendly competition of who picked the best, you know, trunk there to make a living off it. Well, one guy is going through the trunk, and he turns white. The guy turns white, and he says, oh, my God. And everyone stops what they were doing. Everyone stopped looking through their used trunk. Their heart stopped. This guy looked like he was going to have a heart attack. He said, Charlie, what's the matter? What's the matter? What'd you find? What's in there? And he said, I can't even tell you. Look, it's a nun's trunk. He said, what do you mean it's a nun's trunk? How do you know it's a nun's trunk? Well, here's pictures of her. Here's her habit. So what's the big deal? I mean, maybe there's a piece of silver in there. No. He said, you don't want to know what I just found. And they said, well, come on, what is it? No, he said, I don't want to go there. Well, the bottom line is, it's a terribly tragic story. At the bottom of the nun's trunk that was bought at auction, and this woman was long gone, there was an object wrapped in a cloth, muslin cloth. It's easy to confuse. Kids used to say muslin. You know, like a tape. And as he unrolled it, because he didn't know what was in it, he didn't know what he'd find. It could have been a rarity. There was an embryo, an aborted fetus. The embryo in the nun's trunk. I remember writing about that years later in my collection of radio stories called, I think, Psychological Nudity. It's a shocking story in many ways. Today, not a big deal. Today they go to a dance and they throw the baby in a dumpster and go back dancing. That's all. That's what human life has become in America today. In those days, it was a shame that the woman carried with her a whole life. That she aborted the baby and was so heartbroken by what she had done that she went into a nunnery and took her vows from the crime she had committed against humanity. I'm showing you the difference between then and now, the generational difference in the world we live in. No, I'm not blaming Obama. Stop with I can see already the lenses. He didn't do it. That's not the point. I'm showing you a social thing, a transitional story. That's the embryo in a nun's trunk. That's another story from those days. So, you know, I'm looking here. I'm standing here as I do my radio show in one of my home studios. The dog is on the floor eating his blanket. He has his thing. You know, dogs have a blanket. You can't separate him from the blanket. If you pull it from him, it'll grab on it. You have to pick him up in the air. You know, dogs, they're crazy. They're nuts. So in addition, he does things to this blanket that I can't tell you on a family show. Sometimes he just chews on it. Sometimes it's his wife. Sometimes it's his girlfriend. It's shocking what the dog will do with a blanket. So he's chewing the blanket right now. He's being a good boy. On my right side, there's a whole stack of things that I got to tell you about the minute I come back.
My papa, to me he was so wonderful. My papa, to me he was so good.
I used to hear this as a kid. It's a very sentimental, mushy song. It is so out of date. And I wonder today, with things, how they've changed. Does anyone still even look up to their father anymore after 40 or 50 years of bashing men, of the witches bashing men and debasing manhood, debasing masculinity, debasing the father? Does anyone really look up to their father anymore? And that's what I'm really wondering, what they've done to this country. That's why we get what we get for the presidencies now. It really leads back to this election, which, again, I don't want to jump into it, but Trump represents father. Trump represents, I said that before, I said it months ago, he represents father America, old father America, white male, right? Tall, white male, successful. He's representing that. You have a choice right now, a very clear choice, which is radical mean feminism, open borders, no values whatsoever other than debasing men, or older American values. That's what the choice really is. And I don't know the demographics are there for us who really want America back. I don't know that we have the demographics. I think that the demon in the White House has so muddied the waters by dumping so many illegal aliens in so many Republican districts over these 8 horrible years that we may never recover from the damage this demon has done. That's what I think, honestly. So that's why I went into a time warp distraction for you on these stories, the tangents. And if you want me to do politics, maybe I'll do it, maybe I won't. But if you want to call about the tangents and the stories I've been telling and more about that, I'll be here for another big hour right here on the Savage Nation. And with God's will, I'll be back tomorrow on the Savage Nation. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Front group, in my opinion, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, which is nothing, in my opinion, but a terrorist front group, in my opinion. And I say that for a good reason. The reason is that they're on the wrong side of everything, in my opinion. Well, they sued an airline that hired a Muslim woman. Now, she took the job knowing she was going to be a flight attendant. So what did she do? She said that they forced her to serve alcohol when she wouldn't do it because she's such a good frum Muslim. She wouldn't serve alcohol to passengers, this sacred, clean Muslim woman. So what did she take the job for? What did she take the job for? She took it for one reason only, to sue the airline. To force the airline to stop serving alcohol. To force America to stop drinking alcohol. To force America to become a third world Muslim hellhole. I don't want to live like they do in their garbage cans. I never wanted to live in a third world hellhole. And I don't want to be dragged there by these vermin in care. So here's the question for you. Muslim flight attendant sues ExpressJet over suspension. She took the job knowing one of her duties would be to serve alcohol. That's what a flight attendant does. And then Miss Sacred Hijab, oh, I won't touch that dirty alcohol. I'm a clean Muslim. So she files a lawsuit using the Council on American Islamic Relations. You know who they are, don't you? Well, my friends, how do you feel about this? How far can Muslims push us until we push back? If Trump becomes president, should Trump close down care for being a Sharia front group trying to subvert our constitutional freedoms? You betcha. She knew what the job required when she took it. Isn't this a criminal act by a terrorist sympathizing organization, in your opinion? This is not about diversity. This is about twisting America into Sharia law. And if I have to spell out for you what Sharia law is, you really are stupid. That's topic number one. Here in San Francisco, crime is out of control. A group of burglars just drove a van through a Fisherman's Wharf storefront while it was closed, smashed the van into the TV store, digital center, photography and electronics store, in the middle of the night while the owners were away on vacation. The thieves crashed into the store and stole electronics. Smash and grab robberies are on the rise in the San Francisco area. Why do you think that's happening? Don't you think it's because of Obama's war on the cops? Don't you think it's because the mayor's war on the cops and bending over backwards to various and sundry pressure terrorist and criminal organizations? What about your town and city? Is crime on the rise? Give us examples. Here's another little topic. A group of old degenerate hippies marched through the city naked for the right to bear all. This nauseates me. Is San Francisco the most boring, passé city on earth? A nude march in August of 2016, a nude march in San Francisco? Oh, my. How exciting can we get? How cutting edge can we be in wild, free San Francisco? Oh, what a goofy city it is. Nudists ran through the body in order to prove that we should all be able to be nude whenever we want. Hey, hey, ho, ho. Body freedom is here to stay. Hey there, dude. You're no prude. Get in the mood. Join us nude, chanted the losers, the old losers. This is San Francisco. Stripped down march for right to bear all. They don't have jobs, these people. What do they live on? God only knows. By the way, do you speak any Mayan indigenous languages? Yeah. Did you watch the movie by Mel Gibson, Apocalypso, a number of years ago? Very, very daring movie, by the way, filmed in a Mayan language. Well, apparently right now we need Mayan indigenous language interpreters. I wonder why we need so many interpreters. Why? Why do we need this? Well, you see, there's a shortage of people who can translate Mayan languages, especially Quiche and Mam. This is especially needed for arrivals from Guatemala, which is home to more than 24 indigenous languages, but also from wonderful countries such as Honduras, which is exporting not only Zika to us, but many, many other things. And they go into asylum offices in Anaheim, California, and they speak in their native languages, and they need interpreters now. They can't speak English, and in order to make sure that we get more of the Earth's poor, uneducated, and diseased, they're begging for translators in Mayan languages. See, Mam is a Mayan language spoken more than 500,000 people in Guatemala. That's very important to know. And you should learn Mam and Quiche. We must have more interpreters, especially for immigration hearings, because we need more of them. Don't you think we need more 14th century Mayans in America? Isn't that what we need for the jobs of the future, would be Mayan-speaking people? That's going to make for a much more diverse workplace, a much smoother workplace, a much brighter workplace. In other words, Hillary's workplace. So, my friends, this interpreter shortage is exacerbated because there's a lack of Mayan language interpreter courses, you see. And now, my friends, you've heard the rest of that story. Because we're bringing in so many people from the 14th century from the Middle East, now from ancient Mayan lands, like the new Guatemala. Instead of them learning English, we have to learn Mayan. So the two main questions are, what do you fear most about a Hillary presidency? We know what you fear about a Trump presidency if you're a Democrat, because we hear it 24/7. Every channel, every news show, Trump this, Trump that, Trump this, Trump that. Then 50 stooges who are going to lose their jobs come out and say he's a nuclear disaster. We hear it every day, but we never hear anything negative about her. How is it possible? Many people fear her deeply, for good reason. Now, on a macro level, we know she stands for a very big government. You say, well, what's wrong with that? Just think Stalin, if you want to know what big government. Think Mao Zedong. Think any dictator. That's what federal governments are. Federal civilian workforce soars to 2.79 million employees after years of restraint. It's the biggest it's ever been in history. Almost 3 million people work for the federal government. Obama has grown it like a helium balloon. Why? Why? Because they're patronage positions. They are patronage positions. They're highly coveted by people who cannot do anything else. They're highly coveted by deadbeats who can't get a job in the private sector. They're highly coveted by college graduates who are fit for nothing. They all want a federal job. Jog in the morning, drink coffee, look fit and do nothing, and then move up the GS scale. Just make more and more money for doing less and less. Everybody wants a federal job. They did so in the Soviet Union. How'd that work out? Until eventually the government, the whole society collapsed because the people had to pay for the jobs. I think that Trump would shrink the civilian workforce. By the way, I'm pretty sure he would. We don't know. See, this is the one thing about Trump that's starting to worry me, and I have to say it. Now it's going to be free child care for all? That's amazing to me. Half the things he's saying seem like they're very liberal. I like the tax revolution of Donald Trump. I like the tax revolution enormously. I think it'll be good for me personally and for the economy and for jobs, for sure. It doesn't have to be about the rich only. I mean, the fact is that when people own businesses and pay less taxes, where do you think the money goes? You don't seem to understand that. They don't put it under the mattress. They reinvest the money. They expand their factories and they hire people, or they buy a yacht. Who builds a yacht? Workers. Or they buy a Gulfstream jet. Who builds a Gulfstream jet? They're built in Georgia. American workers. So why do you resent the rich so much? Their workers build jets. Workers build boats, whether they're yachts or small pleasure craft. Why would you want to fight that? So that's a good thing. But then he says he's going to pay for child care? This is starting to get a little weird now. This is a Freako article. Clinton and Trump debate sites plan a third podium. That's really weird. A third podium for whom? The bell tolls. Clinton-Trump debate sites plan for a third podium. With third-party candidates hovering near the threshold, the debate commission advises hosts to consider a bigger stage. That's rubbish. That's absolute rubbish. Gary Johnson and Jill Stein couldn't collect the same number of votes that I could, and I'm not running. I mean, if I said tomorrow I'm running for office, I could pull a certain percentage of the vote away from Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Gary Johnson has no following whatsoever, a bunch of cranks. Jill Stein, I don't know who she is. I have no idea who these people are. The only reason to put him up there would be to trip up Donald Trump. Commission for presidential debates. That's nonsense. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth and financial future. Call 1-800-289-2646. So, the two main questions are, what do you fear most about a Hillary presidency? We know what you fear about a Trump presidency if you're a Democrat, because we hear it 24/7. Every channel, every news show, Trump this, Trump that, Trump this, Trump that. Then 50 stooges who are going to lose their jobs come out and say he's a nuclear disaster. We hear it every day, but we never hear anything negative about her. How is it possible? Many people fear her deeply, for good reason. Now, on a macro level, We know she stands for a very big government. You say, well, what's wrong with that? Just think Stalin, if you want to know what big government. Think Mao Zedong. Think any dictator. That's what federal governments are. Federal civilian workforce soars to 2.79 million employees after years of restraint. It's the biggest it's ever been in history. Almost 3 million people work for the federal government. Obama has grown it like a helium balloon. Why? Why? Because they're patronage positions. They are patronage positions. They're highly coveted by people who cannot do anything else. They're highly coveted by deadbeats who can't get a job in the private sector. They're highly coveted by college graduates who are fit for nothing. They all want a federal job. Jog in the morning, drink coffee, look fit and do nothing, and then move up the GS scale. Just make more and more money for doing less and less. Everybody wants a federal job. They did so in the Soviet Union. How'd that work out? Until eventually the government, the whole society collapsed because the people had to pay for the jobs. I think that Trump would shrink the civilian workforce. By the way, I'm pretty sure he would. We don't know. See, this is the one thing about Trump that's starting to worry me, and I have to say it. Now it's going to be free child care for all? That's amazing to me. Half the things he's saying seem like they're very liberal. I like the tax revolution of Donald Trump. I like the tax revolution enormously. I think it'll be good for me personally and for the economy and for jobs, for sure. It doesn't have to be about the rich only. I mean, the fact is that when people own businesses and pay less taxes, where do you think the money goes? You don't seem to understand that. They don't put it under the mattress. They reinvest the money. They expand their factories and they hire people, or they buy a yacht. Who builds a yacht? Workers. Or they buy a Gulfstream jet. Who builds a Gulfstream jet? They're built in Georgia. American workers. So why do you resent the rich so much? Their workers build jets. Workers build boats, whether they're yachts or small pleasure craft. Why would you want to fight that? So that's a good thing. But then he says he's going to pay for child care. This is starting to get a little weird now, where he's going. I can't even find the article. This is a really worrisome. You want to see this? This is a freako article. Clinton and Trump debate sites plan a third podium. That's really weird. A third podium for whom? The bell tolls. Clinton-Trump debate sites plan for a third podium. With third-party candidates hovering near the threshold, the debate commission advises hosts to consider a bigger stage. That's rubbish. That's absolute rubbish. Gary Johnson and Jill Stein couldn't collect the same number of votes that I could, and I'm not running. I mean, if I said tomorrow I'm running for office, I could pull a certain percentage of the vote away from Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Gary Johnson has no following whatsoever, a bunch of cranks. Jill Stein, I don't know who she is. I have no idea who these people are. The only reason to put them up there would be to trip up Donald Trump. Commission for presidential debates. That's nonsense. Okay, don't even call on that one. What do you think Obama will do when he leaves the presidency? I'm flying high today. I had an espresso before the show with a little twist of the lemon rind a la Mulberry Street of my youth. I never understood the lemon part of coffee until I got older, and then I realized that it balances out the acid in coffee. It's very brilliant. So it's very good. Now I don't have to eat lunch on air. Once I have coffee, I'm so hyper I can't even eat, which is a double. You get a double out of it. So I'm good for 3 hours. I'm good to go. Tomorrow, big announcement coming from me and from others about a lot to do with my show that you're going to be, those of you who love me are going to be very happy when you see this tomorrow. Those of you who are jealous of me and have hoped I would trip finally and fall off the stage, I'm sorry. You're going to have a very bad day tomorrow. All of you who stood in my way are going to have a miserable day tomorrow. Very miserable. All of you who know you can't compete with me, you're going to have a really miserable day. All of the Salieris out there are going to have a very bad day. All of the Salieris are going to break their violins. There's only one Mozart. Mozart makes his announcement tomorrow. Anyway, that's tomorrow. Today we've got to deal with the topics. I've given you some of them. Here's another one that I didn't throw into the mix. And I'll throw it all out now while the caffeine is still high in the sky. China's attacking Trump, which is a good thing. China says Trump plays a China-bashing card amid falling popularity. Now, if you read this press release from the Chinese, Xinhua, which I think is their official news agent, that's their Pravda. It's like their NBC or CNN. Xinhua has attacked Trump, saying that it's inflammatory rhetoric meant to appeal to blue-collar Midwestern voters. It called Trump's remarks dangerous and said they offered nothing of substance to improve bilateral relations. Well, this means that Trump's doing something right. Of course he's said things that have substance. He's going to raise tariffs on Chinese goods. That's a good thing. I published it in, which book was it? I think Stop the Coming Civil War was one of my ideas. Yeah, so that's a very good idea. So why would China get mad? Because they're afraid they'll actually have to pay their fair share and stop screwing us. Trump accuses China of illegally subsidizing exports. By the way, Japan did that until they destroyed our electronics industry. Manipulating its currency. Of course they're doing that. Stealing intellectual property. Of course they do that. They're recurring themes in his campaign because they're real. They're very real. Of course, nobody talks about China's communist political system or human rights abuses. No one talks about the torture, the death labor camps, mainly of the Christians in China. It's swept under the rug. So China's attacking him. And they're saying that it's doing strictly as China bashing, which is nonsense. Utter nonsense. Let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. What do you fear most about a Hillary presidency? Other than hearing a grating voice for 8 years. That's what the part I can't take is listening to her. That hard voice. It's not that it scares me, it offends me deeply. I find her very offensive. I don't like women who are not feminine. I don't like hard women who are like men without, well, let's put it this way, men without pants. It's a family show. What's the difference between a man and a woman if a woman is as ruthless as a man? What is the benefit? I don't understand why women are so excited about, oh, she's the first woman. In what sense is she the first woman president? What does that matter? Why would that matter? What is that issue? WABC Dan, what do you fear most about a Hillary presidency?
Well, besides listening to that shrill voice for the next 8 years, is has her lust for absolute power. I think that she's going to do anything she possibly can to keep the Democratic Party in power and change the demographic completely of the country, you know, with the legals and grant amnesty, anything she possibly can to just give it.
So in other words, she will continue to attack the white male portion of the population in particular. I mean, let's cut to the chase. We know she has a vendetta for white males. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Come on.
We know that the entire Democrat Party has we know the entire Democrat Party has said, we don't need blue-collar whites anymore. We are importing the voters. We don't need you. That's what the entire modality of their diversity pitch happens to be. Give us all the minorities, give us all the gays, give us all the immigrants, because eventually we will win by demographics. Is that not their message?
Absolutely, and they'll do and say anything.
How could any white male ever vote for a Democrat? I'll never understand. I don't understand it because they're digging their own grave.
And I'm
That's all. End of story. Let's move on. That's all. Okay, here's another. I'm getting great callers. I like some from around the country. It's all WABC. Is there no one else out there, Jim? Like out of the 9 callers I can get at any time or 10. I'm overloaded with WABC because they love me in New York, because I sound like I'm from New York, because I am. You know that no one in New York sounds like they're from New York anymore because they're all from Cleveland or somewhere else? The people who love New York most were not born there. I found it out. Most of the excitement in New York and Manhattan in particular are from people who were never born there. They're excited to be there because compared to where they came from, it's exciting. I mean, where else can you... Whatever, I can't do it. It's a family show. But the thing is... New Yorkers are not that excited about living in New York. They don't get everything. Wow, I'm so happy to be a New Yorker. Oh, yeah. That's so provincial. That is the most provincial thing on earth, to think you're better than everyone because you live east of the Hudson River. What does that make you? What? You saw an actor in the street? That's like Hollywood's the same thing. People go to restaurants just to see somebody. The food is horrible. If I could name the restaurants I went to that you should never go to in Hollywood again, I'd never be allowed in again, but it doesn't really matter because I don't intend to ever go there again. I couldn't believe how bad it was. The Italian food I had the other night in Hollywood was so bad, and it was like hard to get in and this and that. It was horrible. The worst. I couldn't wait to get home and go to my local pizzeria. It was better. And then it was so bad that I cooked my own food for two nights in a row. So what I'm saying is, what do people go to these restaurants for? To be seen and to see. So if you're a nobody, no one sees you because they don't know who you are. So you're going there just to see Katzenberg, Hatzenberg, Matzenberg, Ratzenberg. Like if you're another, oh God, there's, and does that make your meal better that you saw somebody? To me, it's the sauce, not the people. So anyway, it's the same thing with New York. What's the big deal? I mean, what's the big deal? It's a great city, and that's the end of it. But the thing is, what's so exciting about so many things about cities anymore? You know, but people in New York love me. That's why I got distracted. The reason the show is number one on WABC and why people resent me is because they're not even from New York, but they're, let's put it to you this way, they sound like they think that they're from New York, but I actually am from New York even though I don't live there. How is that possible? I'm like in a time capsule. Like, I left New York in, I don't even know the year I left. God, I left in the hippie era. I fled New York in 1968. Would you believe it? It's true I moved back for short periods of time. It's true my family, in part, is still there. Not so much. Since my mother died, may she rest in the soul, I don't go back there. My ancestors are buried out there. My grandfather's buried there. My father, may rest in peace. My mother, may she rest in peace. My brother. I mean, they're all there, you know. But, so where are you really from? Tell me where you're really from in this world. How do you identify with where you're from, where your ancestors are buried? That's how it used to be, incidentally. Maybe that's how we should do a litmus test now for politicians. I mean, Hillary's as much a New Yorker as my dog is, Chappaqua. I love that one. She's a New Yorker, right? Yeah. That wasn't a road to the presidency. And the airplane that went down with that seat and that was perfect and selected directly for that and gone. That strange air crash, everyone forgot that one. No one even talks about it. Do you remember JFK Jr., the strange airplane crash? He was in the secured liberal Democratic seat, the Moynihan seat, which was a lock right to the presidency. He actually should be running. Did you know that? Do you know that he actually would have run instead of Obama, JFK Jr.? Did you know that? But he had that strange plane crash that went down over the over Long Island Sound. You forgot that already. I don't forget these things. And then all of a sudden, a carpetbagger arrives on the scene, direct from Arkansas. And now she's running for the presidency as a real New Yorker. You talk about a novel. Good God. It's a good thing I don't write novels much anymore. I want to talk about some other things. I'm kind of bored of politics, but I'll do the politics for a while. I think I'm burned out again. I really am burned out of this. It's like the 9th of August. And I used to do in August, the end of August in the Hotel Savage. Remember that? Raise your hand if you remember that segment. August was a lag month. Most sane people are away. Psychiatrists go away is pretty standard. Your therapist is gone. Everyone goes away in August. So if you're not going away and you're still listening to talk radio, do you still want to hear day and night? Is that all you want to talk about? Crump and Trinton? The day and night? Clump and Trinton? It's like a blur already. Clump or Trinton. You don't know who is who anymore. It's like a blur. It's starting to get a blur. And we all want it to be over with. This is like a final exam that cannot come soon enough so we can move on. We can't take the pain anymore. It's painful. Do you know that this campaign is becoming painful? And by the way, I don't know that she's going to finish the race. It looks to me like she's stumbling and falling. And she's going to... I don't think she can finish this one with the steps... And the brain freeze, did you see the brain freeze the other night? In the middle of a speech, a zero. A zero, forgot what she was talking about. Trump, on the other hand, because of the meatloaf and the good air of Alley Pond Park of his youth, I think he's stronger than people give him credit for. I remember when he was on the show, way in the beginning of the campaign, I said, do you think you have the stamina for this? And he said, yes, I do, because I had wonderful parents. It was an amazing answer. Everyone forgot that. I guess I'm running short. I'll be back. It is the Savage Nation. We have time for a couple of great calls. There's no breaking news. The same old story. Now the New York Post is accusing Trump of suggesting that people shoot Hillary. It's wonderful, wonderful to see this campaign. It's worse than reality television. It is worse than the plastic dolls on The Real Housewives of, you know. I don't know if Hillary's going to be able to get through this campaign. She's making a lot of mistakes, brain freeze, the tripping, the coughing, the gagging. Now the terrorist father sitting two rows behind her in Orlando. Of course, you won't see that on his Izvestia or Pravda tonight. There he is, two rows back. The man who shot up all of those gays in the nightclub, invited to her as she to the speech, two rows down. They didn't by accident. No one gets two rows to a, from a candidate by accident. They handpicked them. The terrorist is sitting two rows away from a woman who would be president. Now, either she didn't know or someone in her campaign is undermining her. One or the other. But someone should answer for this, by the way. MAL, Jerry, 30 seconds or less. What's on your mind, Jerry?
Dr. Savage, I'm 35 years old. I've been listening to you for several years now. And I just wanted to call about your story in the last hour segment. Yeah, I find it refreshing. I know the last caller said that, but gives me a little bit of respite when I'm driving home from work. I actually take a long way home from work just to hear some of your stories a little bit longer. And
I used to hear that all the time in San Francisco, that guys would take detours or sit in driveways to listen to the show because the wives didn't like me very much.
Yeah, I sit in the parking lot at the daycare when I go to pick up my daughter, and they're just staring at me, and I can see them looking at their watch, wondering when I'm going to come in and pick up my daughter. But
all right, so you like the diversions, the distractions, the free association, and the family. Well, the nostalgia stories. I think I know why it touches a raw nerve, because people are, well, they're interested in reality, number one, real reality, as opposed to the fake reality that we are served up on a daily basis on television and in the political world. You talk about reality. Tell me what's real about this campaign. Thanks for the call. This is a real campaign? This is a reality show. KSFO, Roseanne, line 6, 30 seconds or less. Fire away.
Hi. I wanted to make a point about, oh, my papa. I'm Italian. I grew up, and my mother used to play that and drink scotch while she cleaned the house on a Saturday morning and cry. But I actually remember your dead man's pants story. And
yes.
I found a, I worked in the army, and I got a call from someone who wants to donate suits from this dead guy. So I started laughing hysterically, and they were saying, like, well, why would you do that? And I'm thinking, dead man's pants. I mean, how many?
Oh, my famous story of dead man's pants and psychological nudity. So a woman's donating the clothing of her dead husband to the military. By the way, where does that clothing go in the military?
Well, some soldiers that are looking to get jobs.
You mean after they get out, they need clothing?
Correct.
Interesting. Well, God bless you. Thank you very much. Look at the kind people out there. Thanks for that call, line 6. So what do you fear most about a Hillary presidency? That touched the raw nerve. I can't do any more of it because we're flat out of time. Here she is giving a memorial, so-called, to the dead gays. Doesn't mention the word Islam. Doesn't mention terrorism. Sits the father there whose son killed all